This is a Ben Fred Friday. We visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and I got to tell you about the doctors of Blue Tail Medical Group, some of the nation's top experts in the fields of sports medicine, stem cell, regenerative therapies. Before you think about surgery, think about stem cell regenerative therapies. Now, we all know that surgery can keep you on the sidelines for a long time, 6 months, 10 months, a year. Well, think about stem cell regenerative therapy before you have surgery. If you want to do it, they are the leaders in that area in our country. Doctors Bays, Crane, and Wolf, experts stem cell regenerative therapy. It's Blue Tail Medical Group. Schedule an appointment today, 636-778-2900, 636-778-2900. Visit them at bluetailmedicalgroup.com. We say good morning to Ben Fredrickson on this Friday. Hello, Ben. How are you?
Good morning, Dan. I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. The Blues, we're going to get into them. We're going to get into Mizzou. We're going to get into baseball. I want to start with baseball. We're now a week removed from the winter warm-up, and there was a lot of news, even though there hasn't been a lot of player movement, but a lot of news concerning the Cardinals from the winter warm-up, whether it be seating capacity, getting fans in the stands, the start of spring training, how this is going to look, the fact that Bill DeWitt Jr. said that offers have been made to both Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright. Those are some of the main highlights from the warm-up. But what did you take away from watching some of the Zooms and the interviews of the winter warm-up?
Well, the biggest one was kind of the hurry up and wait theme, right? The Cardinals, like baseball, are preparing to start this thing off as normal as possible. You know, a full spring training starting on time with a full 162 major league season. And while that seems optimistic right now, they can't really plan for anything else. We will see how that changes. And we have to, you know, be realistic that it very well could change. It was curious to hear the Cardinals talk about, hey, this is the plan as of now. But then you hear a comment, you know, in your interview with Michael Gersh, the general manager, and he says, yeah, I haven't yet booked my place for spring training. And it's like, whoa, everything is in pencil, and it's just going to be that way until the games are played. So things are going to have to be flexible. And it really, I think, has put a lot of teams, including the Cardinals, kind of in a holding pattern. You know, it was good to get an update too on where things stand with Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright. I'll be honest, Dan, I thought this would have been figured out by now. Especially with Wainwright, because the Cardinals have worked and agreed on back-to-back one-year deals with him before that have a pretty modest guarantee and a decent, you know, amount of ceiling for incentive-based earnings, which I feel like would be a common sense, you know, deal to work out with him again, maybe give him a little more guaranteed because of how well he pitched last season. But I don't know why things would be drastically different this year unless, you know, it's being kind of held up by the Molina negotiations. These are two separate things, so I'm not sure why one would influence the other. I know that at one point Wainwright was kind of waiting to hear from the Cardinals. Now it sounds like he has. It will just be a matter of if he wants to take that offer or if he thinks he can maybe get a little more elsewhere. Molina's a little more interesting. You know, he's kind of changed his tune a little bit, Dan. He's said, look, if I don't get the offer I want, I'll consider retiring. Well, if he's only going to entertain 2-year offers or 1-year offers that, you know, pay him only what he wants, then I think the question becomes, is he more interested in retiring than playing? Because clearly I would have to think there's teams that would like to have Yadier Molina on 1 year. They might be a little more skeptical about 2 or the terms of an option for 2, but would he really retire as opposed to accepting a 1-year deal? That's kind of hard for me to believe. A lot of the teams that have been in on Molina that have shown interest in him, they have since moved off in other areas, whether it's picking up, you know, McCann by the Mets, whether it's getting Kurt Suzuki. Some of these teams have made moves that would suggest they're not in that market. So I'll be maybe Pollyanna here, but I still think this is going to end with these guys being back in the fold for the Cardinals. However, with less than a month to go until spring training, it gets a little more risky every single day.
I found it interesting, too, in talking with whether it was Gary LaRocque, who runs a minor league system, or even John Mozeliak, and reading now comments coming out across the league in Major League Baseball, how teams will be cautious, especially early on, with their pitching. And because of that, even though the Cardinals have not done anything, and they literally have not done anything, that their pitching is going to be ahead of the game against other teams, especially in the Central Division. I still think the Cardinals are ahead of the game with other teams in the Central because of their pitching as currently constructed. It's crazy to say that when you haven't done anything to, quote-unquote, improve your club, but that's where they're going to be in this weird, odd time we're in sports and baseball. They still might be ahead of other teams because of the depth of their pitching.
Yeah, they've got a lot of arms, and they're not all proven, but when you've got that many, you can kind of throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And the other thing that would allow them to really fan things out across that pitching staff would be to do what Mo kind of mentioned, almost kind of casually, is like a piggyback type rotation. Usually the Cardinals have kind of turned up their nose at that. They've been big fans of a more traditional five-man look. Now, they have done piggybacks and two-starter approaches, six-man rotations or more in the minors, you know, where they really work to get guys innings. And that's been the priority for the development of these young pitchers. They worry more about the innings than one guy going out and getting a win in the minor leagues, but it's always been different in the majors. It's always been treated a little differently. Maybe this is the year where we see that change for the Cardinals. Maybe they're a little more open to some of this. I wouldn't say fluky because it's become popular in other teams, but a little more open to a non-traditional pitching staff. And certainly if they're going to be losing Adam Wainwright, or they're preparing for rotation post Waino, then finding a way to spread out those innings and spread out that pressure on multiple guys who could be starters could be a good way to do it. So we could, I guess, see potentially a rotation by committee. And I think we're probably, as of right now, going to see an outfield by committee too. And that was the other thing that I took out of winter warmup. The Cardinals were kind of sounding like this entering winter warmup, but leaving it and during it, they really sound like a team to me that, unless they're just playing a hell of a poker face, they're not really interested right now, I don't think, in bringing in any sort of new outfielder for the major league equation, especially if Justin Williams is out of options. That means there's one more mouth to feed there. I know Cardinals fans are frustrated with the state of the outfield, but Lane Thomas hasn't had a chance really to show what he can do. You got Justin Williams. You got Dylan Carlson, who hasn't had a full season. Now, if the Cardinals play Tyler O'Neill, Harrison Bader, and Dexter Fowler every day, and then talk about, you know, needing to get other guys a chance, well, that's them not putting their money where their mouth is. If they truly treat this outfield as an open competition, then maybe they could have more offensive production from that group, but they can't have it both ways. And I think that's where things stand. It sounds to me like what they really would like is to kind of have a mix in the outfield to try to get these guys opportunities and really once and for all figure out who they're riding with and who they're done with. And you also remember that Fowler's contract is up after this season, but still supplement the offense in some way by adding a proven DH. Now, right now, getting back to our first topic, not knowing if there will be a DH, you know, I know that DeWitt and Mo aren't in love with that idea. They prefer the traditional game, but we heard them both pretty much acknowledge that a DH would very much help this team. And there's going to be solid DH options left, considering something like 85 or more percent of DH candidates are still on the market now with a month left before spring starts.
I would have to say that with all the money coming off the books, and you can call it what you want, but this is a transition year. Even though it's not going to come out, they're not going to come out and say it's a transition year, and they have a chance to win. But with money coming off the books and where we're at in society and with revenues and can you get packed stadiums and all that kind of stuff, it is, in to an extent, if you're looking at it from the broad-based view, it's a transition year. It doesn't mean you can't win, but it is somewhat of a transition year maybe for the club.
Well, you might win the division, but you're not going to win anything after that. Right now, there's not one team in the National League Central that looks capable of winning anything past the division. And if the Cardinals are going to – that's how they're going to play it, they should just do themselves a favor and say it. If they bring back Wainwright and Molina – on short-term deals and they find some way to add some short-term but proven help for the offense, then I think, you know, they can say that they're trying to do more than that, considering the state of the division and also the state of baseball in general. But if they let Molina and Wainwright walk and don't do much to improve the offense, then I think this is absolutely a transition year, kind of in some ways, basically a punt on a year. They might win the division, but again, they're not going to do anything after that. You know, and we haven't seen a season in which the Cardinals kind of go into it without really a chance to, without, you know, an honest way of saying they feel like they can make a, you know, get in the playoffs and maybe something good could happen to them. There've been more convincing years than others. The past five have not been all that convincing, but this would be the least convincing year yet on top of letting two guys that make people want to go to the ballpark go, if that turns out to be the case. Here's the thing that I've asked this of the Cardinals, and I've written it, and it's not like I'm coming up with a new concept here, but I'll just keep saying it. You know, they have talked so much about how many fans can they get to the ballpark, and what they will spend is based off of how many folks they can have at Busch Stadium. But what they're not talking about much right now is what kind of product they're putting on the field that makes people want to go to the ballpark. What that makes people want to pick up those season tickets on the tail end of a pandemic, that makes them want to, you know, get out of this kind of stay at home lifestyle and get down to the ballpark. And having Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright makes people want to go to the ballpark. You want to see those guys. It might be your last chance to see them. They played well last year. I'll point out again that Wainwright was this team's best starter last season, and Molina led the team in hitting in the playoff series against the Padres. That those guys give you a reason to go down. And if you don't give folks a reason to go down, I do think you're going to have fans who say, well, the team is waiting until 2022, so why don't we as well? And maybe that's what ends up happening. Again, I'll say this, there's still a month left, and there's going to be bargains to be had. And all you have to do is look around and see just the pure amount of free agents who are unsigned to see that there could be some crazy, crazy moves going on, not in terms of big payrolls and massive contracts, but in terms of teams getting some lineup enhancing players, because unless these guys just want to sit out a year or miss a part of the season before they sign deals, then guys are going to have to start accepting some of these low offers at some point.
Absolutely. Let's switch gears. St. Louis Blues, disappointing couple of nights ago. And as you look at the beginning of the season, the Blues special teams has not been where it needs to be. And when you signed Krug, you thought power play could be improved. Even minus Petro, you're getting a guy that is offensive-minded. He's been okay, not great. The penalty situation has been awful for the Blues. I think Bennington has been pretty good. Just your general assessment of what you've seen from the Blues thus far.
Well, I think it's two things. They've got to clean up their special teams. And they've got to get their play up to a championship caliber, because that's kind of the team they should be. But it's also, I think, shown too the standards that are now set for the Blues. You know, they beat a really good Avalanche team in their opening night. They got drilled in the second game. They beat San Jose in their first game back at home, and then salvaged a point out of the second game. They're in pretty good shape in terms of the start to their season, but we obviously know they should be playing so much better, and it speaks to kind of their standard now that's not good enough. So yeah, they got to get the special teams figured out. The penalty kill looked better in that second game against the Sharks. I know some of those numbers were inflated a little bit because some of those power plays for San Jose were super short. Bennington looked outstanding in that game. I think he's really answered the test here early. Some folks, I wasn't one of them, were worried about him. I think the power play will find its footing as it, you know, there's some new guys, some new blood. I think these guys will kind of get it going. There are a lot of positives. Jordan Kyrou has been outstanding, leading the team in points. He's doing the little things Craig Berube likes him to do. I think Justin Falk looks a lot better. He's been a much more solid player, not just scoring, but just looks more comfortable out there. So that's those are two guys that you'd probably put first and foremost, three, including Bennington, that you really wanted to see have strong starts, and they've been good on 5-on-5 for the most part. So I think there's a lot to like there, but when Berube comes out post game after the shootout loss and just nukes his team for not skating hard and not being good enough, was kind of given an opportunity to maybe say, hey, some of those penalties were kind of ticky-tack. He dodged it, said, no, they're penalties. We got to stop committing them. And he's right. I mean, they're too sloppy. They're too penalty prone, and they got to clean that up, and he's not happy, so they're not happy. And I love that response. I don't like to see this team lose, obviously, but I like the way they lose. There's accountability across the board, so I think that bodes well for where they're going. The other thing too, quickly, that we're going to learn here, Dan, is it's going to be hard for any team to win these two game sets.
Yep.
It kind of has a playoff type feel, especially if you're starting the same goalie in both games. So I think we're going to see a lot of splits between decent teams. But maybe the bottom will have to drop out on some teams before we start seeing many sweeps. in these two-game series. And we're seeing this across the league as well, not just with the Blues.
I wonder, too, going forward, if the league likes this, if they're saying, hey, this is something that maybe we got to think about going forward, these back-to-back games, because if you have a slash on player X and it happens in October and then the teams don't face each other until January, it's kind of like, well, I remember it, but you know, it was months ago. Where if you have a slash on player X and you play two nights later or the next night, well, that carries over. That has a little fun to it. It's got a little storyline to it. That's not bad for the game, and it's something that adds to it. So I wonder if that carries over to something that the league thinks about if and when we get back to normalcy.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think any league has to be kind of examining what they're doing now and seeing if there's ways to keep it around or if it's adding more intrigue. I can't imagine the players would like it as much because they want to, you know, get moving and get on the road. I don't think they probably love hanging out in host cities longer than a night. You know, would rather just keep burning through the road trip. And I can't imagine goalies like it because goalies don't want to see the same team in you know, with only a day in between. That's kind of a playoff type setup. So I'd be curious if the players would push back against that. But you're right, it does kind of allow for a little more storyline to build. It allows for some animosity and it makes things interesting. So I'm with you that I think it's a little certainly tougher. And I think as a result, maybe an unintended result, I think we're going to see a lot of really close races in these divisions, in part because of the shorter season, but also because it's just going to be hard for teams to sweep these things. There's that desperation factor in that game, too, that we wouldn't see in normal times.
I wonder if Craig Berube, too, will, with the back-to-backs this weekend, go with Ville Husso. At some point, you're going to have to find out about your backup goaltender, give him a start, his first ever NHL start, and find out what you have. Now, he was in that 8-0 blowout loss against the Avalanche. And by my count, just the way I was thinking, I thought maybe he'd get 15, 17 games. So 30, 34 points would be on the table. However, you don't know. Maybe you just continue to ride the hot hand. You didn't have a long training camp. You had a fairly long offseason if you include the shutdown. Then you went into the bubble and then had another offseason, if you will, and you just ride the hot hand. So we'll see how he wants to do it. But I'll be curious to see if that's something that he does this weekend.
It wouldn't be a terrible time to start him after Binnington played so well in that shootout loss, because there would be no sort of worry about, well, could this mean that Binnington's struggling? No, you're just putting the kid out there and getting him, you know, kind of throwing him in the waters. Didn't look great in Colorado in the blowout, but who did? I mean, I don't overanalyze.
That's a good point.
Much. Yeah. So that's kind of I don't want to draw too much out of that. I'm curious to see, you know, how much they really use him. And some of that I think will obviously depend on how well Binnington plays, but also how well Husso plays. Are they just going to use him when Binnington struggles? That's probably not a very good idea, because that makes there be so much more pressure on Husso, right? If it's one thing to say, hey, Binnington had a great game, and he did. He played outstanding. He was the only reason they were in that game in the shootout loss. But he's, you know, we're going to give him the game off. This is on you. That's pressure, but it's not pressure like Binnington has gotten pulled twice and now you're starting. That's a whole different kind of pressure. I don't think Binnington's going to get to that point this year, although you never know. I mean, hockey is crazy, and goalie is one of the most combustible positions in all sports, kind of like a closer. So I don't hate the idea of trying to get him in there with limited pressure. That might be a good time to do it, unless they're just really going to only kind of use him as an emergency type guy, or they feel like they want to really get Binnington in and rooted and centered before they start, you know, before they start giving him nights off. He might want to just play every game right now. And if he feels like that's what he needs to be at his best, and I think you have to factor that into the equation, because he's going to be the guy you're relying on when it comes playoff time. So if you give him some say in this, I think too.
Let's switch gears. Mizzou and football, they've got a new defensive coordinator in Steve Wilks. What do we know about him?
Well, Steve Wilks is a very interesting hire for Eli Drinkwitz. I think it's a really good hire. He is has a ton of NFL experience. He's kind of got a raw deal at the last couple NFL staffs he was at, but he's got a ton of ties, you know, very, very highly respected and praised defensive mind in the NFL. There's fair questions as to how he'll hit the recruiting trail, but the way Eli Drinkwitz is recruiting right now, I don't know that he needs a ton of help on the recruiting trail. I think what he needs is a guy that he can trust to be the coach of his defense. Eli's an offensive mind in addition to a quarterback coach. He's the play caller on the offensive side. He needs somebody he can hand the defense to and say, hey, this is your baby. And Wilkes is, it's hard to find a resume that will be as impressive as his is. He's got his work cut out for him. I mean, this defense struggled last season. It was always hard for me to tell how much of it was, you know, Ryan Walters' fault versus how much of it was the fact they had injuries and opt-outs and COVID. I mean, it was tough, but clearly Drinkwitz saw something that he wanted to improve, or else Ryan Walters would not be at Illinois and Brick Haley would not have been fired, even though they haven't used those terms. That's what I was told that was what happened at Mizzou, the defensive line coach. I think he wanted more pressure along the defensive line. I think he wants maybe a scheme that fits more with what he's doing offensively, that meshes better. And Steve Wilkes was a guy who had some NFL opportunities. So always good when you can grab a guy from the pro ranks and convince him to come back to college. Has a tie to Eli Drinkwitz through his Steve Wilkes' time at App State, obviously before Eli Drinkwitz got there. And there's guys on the staff that he's familiar with. So until we see differently, I think this is a pretty interesting and upbeat hire for Eli Drinkwitz. Throw in the fact that he's recruiting guys left and right, and I think that it's an interesting offseason for him because we're seeing some names depart. And we could see more. I mean, David Gibbs was interviewing for that defensive coordinator job as Mizzou's secondary coach, and now he didn't get it. So you always wonder if that guy ends up leaving. But clearly, Drinkwitz has shown that he's got the Rolodex and the connections to go out and make hires. I don't think he's worried about having to replace people on his staff. And it doesn't seem to be affecting him keeping or signing players. I mean, one of the guys he just let go, Brick Haley, signed like more than five defensive linemen in this last class. They're sticking around by all accounts. He's added a linebacker, grad transfer, and Blaze Aldridge, who's got one of the best college football names you'll find, and looks the part. I mean, he's going to step right into the place of Nick Bolton, and he didn't know who his defensive coordinator was when he jumped on that offer. So right now, I think Drinkwitz is having no problem finding coaches or players who want to come be a part of his team.
Pretty amazing what he did in recruiting, and now he's getting, as you mentioned, some of these transfers that are coming in, and by all accounts, pretty good talent.
Yeah, Mookie Cooper is the other one we should mention. He has added some high school guys for future classes as well, but Mookie Cooper is going to be the guy who could, along with Blaze Aldridge, make an impact next season, Dan. He's the wide receiver out of Ohio State. He didn't catch a pass this year for the Buckeyes, but that's a tough roster to crack. He's from Trinity, had a ton of big offers, didn't much consider Mizzou when he picked Ohio State, but saw what Drinkwitz was doing, saw the playing time being limited ahead of him at Ohio State, and said, hey, I can go help the Tigers now. So he jumps in, and between him and some of the guys that Drinkwitz has recruited, some of the guys Drinkwitz has convinced to come back using that extra year of eligibility, obviously has a quarterback back in Connor Bazelak, or a potential challenger in Tyler Macon. They should have a pretty good offense next season with some new names that could make some impacts.
In terms of hoops, at Tennessee tomorrow, they were thumped in Columbia, so a chance to bounce back and see what they do against one of the best teams led by Rick Barnes in the country.
Yeah, the Volunteers are curious, man. When I watched them beat Missouri,
they're awfully good, boy. They're good.
Well, they beat Missouri by 20 to start the season. I thought, there's not a team in the SEC that can beat this Tennessee team. Well, then they went and lost to Alabama. And we thought, okay, maybe Tennessee's not so good after all. Well, Alabama's really good. And that's what we've learned since then. I mean, their shooting chart down there at Alabama looks like something the Golden State Warriors would put out. They only shoot threes, and they only get layups. There's nothing in between. It's very NBA-style offense. You can see why Nate Oates was challenging Coach K as a guy who wanted to keep college basketball up and running, because he's got a team that's really stinking good. Well, then Tennessee goes and gets drilled by Florida right before this game. Florida, we don't know what to make out of. They've had that terrible thing happen where one of their best players collapsed on the court. They've been kind of trying to get their heads on straight, but they put a licking on Tennessee. And is it a good thing or a bad thing for Mizzou? Well, you probably don't want the team you're hoping to get a revenge game against to get drilled right before you play him, because they're going to be awake. Rick Barnes is challenging his guys. He kind of had some Craig Berube-like comments about his Volunteers. But this needs to be a pride game for Mizzou. And they should play better. Jeremiah Tillman, Dan, the last five or six games has been one of the best players, one of the best big men in the country. He's been a walking double-double. He's avoiding foul trouble. He's confident, and his team's playing through him. That's got to start with him. But also they've had Drew Smith and Mark Smith, who had both been in kind of funks lately, break out of it within the past game or two. So if those three guys can play well and Xavier Pinson can kind of snap his turnover streak, they should be able to give Tennessee a much better game. It's a tough challenge to go and beat this Tennessee team in Knoxville, but I do think we should see a more competitive game than we saw in Columbia, where Mizzou looked like it didn't know what it hit him.
And finally, let's see Slug at least get back on the floor and practice. Man, oh man, December 23rd is the last time that they played. I was supposed to do that game. We got word probably 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning they had had, you know, a COVID test. And obviously at that time, you don't know the details. And now we know some of the details that it ran through their team. Ran through Coach Ford. He struggled with it. I know he told you that. Man, it's just been so tough on them. And still in the top 25, it's going to be I don't know how to put it into words. You know, how are they going to bounce back? Can they bounce back? What kind of shape are they going to be in? I think all those questions are logical, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Well, the good news is they're still in great shape tournament-wise in terms of
for sure
where they are in the net rankings, and they're not going to have a problem or shouldn't getting enough games in to make the NCAA tournament. But as you said, the big question and the unknown is, what are they capable of? How many guys are, I mean, at this point, a lot of these players have had the virus. I mean, we don't know how a guy's going to respond. We know and credit SLU for doing all these rigorous tests to make sure guys are good to go when they play again. But we don't know that that means they're going to feel great and play great. I mean, we saw that play out with the Cardinals with Lane Thomas. You know, he was cleared to play, but he didn't feel right and didn't perform like he should. And he came to come out and said that later. So could SLU go through some of that? Travis is hesitant to push the team hard in practice because he's trying to make sure everybody's good to go. And on top of the virus concern and unknown, hell, they haven't practiced. They haven't gotten shots up. They're conditioning, even if they're cleared on all the tests, is going to have a huge dent in it. These guys talk about feeling funny if they go 3 days without shooting, and now they're going to go more than a month between games. So I think Travis is smart to say, look, we just got to wait and see what we look like. And he's kind of trying to take some pressure off. And I think that's wise, because if you're expecting this team to go out and play like it played before the shutdown, I think you're probably not being realistic. Now, how quickly can they get back? And hopefully that muscle memory is there and those shots fall. It's kind of really going to be a one day, one game at a time thing until we get the sense of what they're capable of. And it's just frustrating because they had this great season in front of them, and they still can. It's all still right there. But we just don't know what kind of team's going to come back, and we really won't until we see them play.
Ben, great stuff as always. We catch up every Friday. We do this, Ben Fred Fridays on Scoops with Danny Mac, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about next week, including maybe some baseball movement, the Hall of Fame, the Blues, Mizzou, and hopefully SLU back on the court. Great stuff, my man, and we'll talk next Friday.
Sounds good, brother. Have a good weekend.